How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
All right, and we are live. Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Lakers. I am your host, Harrison Fagan. Anthony Irwin is not with me tonight. He is busy while we're recording, but later on, we'll be interviewing Baxter Holmes of ESPN about his story on Nick Young's resurrection, which is pretty fitting given the result of the game tonight against the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Lakers escape with a narrow come-from-behind win on a Nick Young buzzer beater. Not buzzer beater, but last second shot. Russell Westbrook had one more chance to tie it. But we'll get into all that in a second. After I'm done talking here on Facebook Live, we're going to throw to an interview with Baxter Holmes. He'll discuss his story on Nick Young, as well as D'Angelo Russell saying that he wants to play like Manu Ginobili. So if you're listening to this right now on Facebook Live, we have a podcast, and you can listen to the full episode later on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, Stitcher, TuneIn, and today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Use the promo code LOLAKERS to get a $20 rebate on your first ticketing purchase. So tonight's takeaways, I think the first one, Nick Young, is back to life, and we'll get into that more with Baxter a little later. But, you know, his kind of resurgence as a player has been pretty shocking to see. What did he have tonight? He ended up finishing with 17 points on 4 of 7 three-point shooting, 6 of 12 from the field. He had 2 blocks, 3 turnovers, so that's not great. 1 assist, that's a high night for him. I think he was great to start the game, and then obviously he had the huge moment down the stretch, and I think that he played good defense on Russell Westbrook for the most part, especially at the beginning of the game, which was it's been pretty shocking to see the career turn. I mean, we mention it all the time, but the career turn of Nick Young to going from defensive minus, who is most likely going to be cut, to defensive plus, who is guarding the other team's best players to start games. Now, granted, because D'Angelo Russell was out tonight, Luke Walton, his other option was starting Jose Calderon on Russell Westbrook. But still, I mean, he's been giving those assignments to Young all year, and I think that that's huge. And I think that, I mean, really, the Lakers forced Westbrook, Young and the Lakers, forced Westbrook into tough shots down the stretch. He ended up hitting 4 threes, but he's not a good three-point shooter. Those were bad shots. He was taking pull-up threes, and those are the exact kind of shots that you want him taking if you're the Lakers. And so he missed 2 chippies at the rim. The Lakers played pretty good. They forced him to, you know, take off-balance shots at the rim, and he's made a lot of those this season, but he didn't make them tonight. They forced him into tough threes. He made some of them, but he missed that final one when it mattered most after Nick Young had hit his three. And I think that the defensive game plan on him was pretty good tonight. He ended up going off. I think he finished with 34 points, 13 assists, and 8 rebounds, so almost a triple-double again in a season when he's almost averaged a triple-double. And so, I mean, it's hard to, I know it's kind of laughable just looking at that box score to say that the Lakers' defensive game plan against him was good, but it was. They forced him to kind of create everything, and at times he was able to, but then when he was on the bench, that the Lakers' bench really went on runs, and they've been really, really valuable this year. And, you know, we've started calling them the the Energizer Bunnies, because that's how Larry Nance Jr. described his own role coming in off the bench. And so I like that. You guys should just let me know on Twitter, at HM Fagan, if you like Energizer Bunnies as the bench nickname. And they've been really good this year. They extended the lead a couple times tonight, but then we kind of saw down the stretch why you still need guys like D'Angelo Russell and like Julius Randle. D'Angelo was obviously held out tonight, and Randle was just not himself. He couldn't really, he didn't have the same burst as normal. He had a couple good passes. He was definitely trying to play the game, and I give him credit for getting out there. He ended up getting 4 assists and 5 rebounds and 3 points on his one made three-pointer. And, you know, I give him credit for going out there tonight despite dealing with the hip issue. That shows a lot of willingness to play through injury, and it shows a lot of leadership for a young guy. But he wasn't really in it tonight. The Lakers rightfully had him sitting down the stretch. And as good as the bench has been, we really saw the problems with the bench and why that lineup, you know, should not be starting or anything like that. Why you still need guys that are in the starting lineup mixed in with those bench players. Because, you know, Clarkson, he started out the fourth quarter, he was getting to the basket at will for most of it, but then he was being forced into jumpers each time down, and a bunch of guys were being forced into jumpers each time down. Lou Williams was taking, you know, pull-up shots, and he made one of them. He missed one late in the game as well. Clarkson was taking pull-up jumpers, and that unit, really, they don't have a guy that can easily create shots for other players, like Randle and Russell have been able to this year. And it just kind of, it devolved into a bunch of Lakers taking three-pointers off the dribble or on pull-ups, and trying to deliver the knockout punch to Oklahoma City, and none of them were able to do it until, I guess, Nick Young finally did. But that buzzer beater aside, which was awesome, and him doing the ice in the vein celebration was awesome. That's like that's really cool to see him and Russell getting along that well. That was, again, another thing that I didn't expect out of Nick Young this year. But that's not great process for the Lakers, as much fun as it was. And so they definitely need some more shot creators on the floor. And Russell and Randle are the only guys who are really exceptional at doing that. Ingram shows flashes of it. Lou's shown flashes of being a playmaker this year. Clarkson has been a playmaker at times. But their most consistent playmakers are going to be Russell and Randle. And that's why you need those guys down the stretch a lot of games, so that it doesn't devolve into hero ball like we saw tonight. And so, just to round up a couple more positives from tonight, Jose Calderon made an appearance for the first time tonight. He's played in other games, but the Jose Calderon that we've come to expect made an appearance for the first time tonight. And he hit a couple threes. I believe he went, I really should have these pulled up and more easily accessible, but that, you know, that's why I'm a pro. He went 4 of 5 from behind the arc. He hit a couple corner threes. I think that it was really, you know, he was solid for them tonight, which he hasn't been so far this year, and that gives the Lakers another weapon to use in different lineups, and that's good if he can continue to make shots. And so Randle struggled. We mentioned that a little bit already. I mentioned the bench a little bit, but I was a little negative on them. They were really good tonight. They extended a couple leads. Nance Jr. had a wonderful game. You know, he would have had 2 more points if Russell Westbrook hadn't flagrant fouled him in what was somehow a no-call in the third quarter, basically tackled him on the break, and ended up not even getting whistled for it. But Nance Jr. had a good game. I thought Tarik Black was really good. He got an and one in either late in the third or early in the fourth. That was really, he was active on the boards. You know, they got out and ran. I thought, I haven't even mentioned Mozgov once tonight, but he was really good. 6 of 10 from the field, as always, active in the pick and roll, setting rock solid screens for guys, going to the basket, making himself a great target as a roll man, and finishing well, catching with soft hands. Mozgov has definitely been a plus for the Lakers this year. And, you know, that was a big game, and that's a big win for the Lakers against an opponent I don't think very many people expected them to beat, especially going into 2 consecutive showdowns with Golden State over the next 3 days. So I'm going to get into some viewer questions now. So I have the first one. This is a Twitter question from Lakers Forever, at Lakers Forever 33. With the strongest bench in the league, we are 1 superstar away from being a contender. Package starters for a major trade? I disagree with that assessment a little bit. I don't think that the Lakers are one superstar away from being a contender. Although I think that their core as of right now has shown enough that I would actually think that say that it argues the opposite. I think that we should give these guys a little bit more time to cook, and I think that the Lakers are going to be happy with what comes out. Because they, you know, if they're doing this well now at this age with 1 year under, not even a full year under Luke Walton, their first year under Luke Walton, then I think that they're, as they age and they start to hit their primes, they're only going to get better. So now, obviously, if a team like the Pacers or someone offers like Paul George for just like one of these core pieces, then maybe you consider that deal. But you don't want to be packaging multiple of these guys and mortgaging your future in a desperate attempt to maybe make the playoffs or something like that, or even be a contender in Lakers Forever's eyes. I'm not quite sure I agree with that assessment. So, and then we got another one from Ernie, at sign ASL76. And he asked if I liked the small ball. And he said, I think sometimes they settle for threes instead of driving. And I think that we saw that down the stretch tonight. Now, I don't think that that's necessarily an indictment of small ball. And I think that small ball was really effective for the Lakers tonight. And I think it's been one of the reasons why they've been so good this season. And so I don't think that you can... I don't think that you can think that the Lakers have been successful and that they've been playing well and not appreciate their small ball. Now, maybe there are times in certain matchups where it's not going to work. I think we saw them, you know, get hurt a little bit on the boards tonight, it looked like. But overall, you know, I think their small ball has been a real weapon for them, and I don't think that that's something that they should necessarily be going away from. So now let's get some Facebook questions. This one from Donald Stonecipher says, could you see Ingram playing the one, a la Sean Livingston? The Lakers kind of do have him playing the one right now. I don't think that that's going to necessarily be their long-term thing, but I think positions are a little bit overrated anyway. I think long-term, he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. The Lakers are putting the ball in his hands now as a 19-year-old rookie as the backup bench point guard. He's definitely going to be a guy that you see bringing the ball down throughout his career just based off of what he's already shown. And so I don't think that, I don't know that he's necessarily going to be starting at point guard or anything like that, but he is going to play a type of point forward-ish role. And so I think that that's something that we're going to see from him more going forward. Robert Idoliantes, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, says, I don't want to trade anyone, but dang, let the superstar free agents come to us. The rebuild is real and awesome. I agree that the rebuild is real and awesome. I don't think you're going to get your wish granted with the Lakers trading dang, but we'll see what happens there. He's really, out of their 10 consistent rotation guys, the only one that's just been a minus on most nights. Other than that, most of these guys have been really good throughout the season. So let's scroll through and see what other questions we can find. Patrick Michael asks, would adding Ingram to the starting lineup give Luke the energy he said he's looking for? Dang's deficiencies have to be addressed. So I'm sensing a consistent theme here. The Lakers fans are not super thrilled with Dang as of just yet. Or actually, as I get a comment that says, stop hating on Dang. But I don't think that we're going to get Ingram in the starting lineup just yet. I think Luke is going to give Dang a little bit more time to figure things out, unless they rest him with an injury, which I don't think it's out of the question to maybe guess that there is an injury there for Dang, because he was not this bad in Miami last year. And so I think that I don't think that we're going to get Ingram in the starting lineup just yet. After the All-Star break, I think we might start to see that more, but I also don't know that I would want to break up that bench unit that's been so good for the Lakers and mess with what's been a good thing when the starters, when Russell is in there, seem to be starting to hit a little bit of a stride before he injured his ankle. So let's keep going. Maurice Malari asks, is it delusional for me to think that we have a shot at making the playoffs? At this point, I don't know that it's totally delusional to think that there's a chance that the Lakers could make the playoffs, but it's not what I'm expecting. I think that fans, really, this year, you should enjoy the wins when they happen, you know, enjoy feeling something again when the Lakers lose, but I don't think that you should get too caught up in the expectations of playoffs or not playoffs. I think if they end up being competitive and they make a run at that, it's fantastic, it's an unexpected surprise. But I don't think that that should necessarily start to be the expectation, at least in my opinion. But they have been very good, and they've been better than I thought they'd be, so what do I know, really? And, you know, I think that's the end of the questions that we have. So D'Angelo Russell, again, he missed tonight's game. The Lakers escape with a win against Russell Westbrook. And I'm going to go ahead and throw to our interview with Baxter Holmes that I'm really excited about right now, which you will be able to catch on the full podcast.
All right, so basically I was just thinking we just kind of have like a free conversation about Nick Young, because he, like, I feel like he is about as true a statement about this Lakers season as there is. Like, he sums it up just about as well as you can.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. As I talked to him the other day, I don't think, you know, I know he said when I talked to him that if you'd have told him a few months ago that he would be in the position he is now, he wouldn't have believed it. Right. And I don't think anybody else does either. I'm still trying to kind of grappling with this fact of what Luke Walton said the other night when I asked him about, are you just used to Nick playing like this? He's like, yeah, I expect it every night. You know, he's our starting shooting guard. And part of me is just like, man, this is Nick Young we're talking about. Like, you know, this is the guy who was in Byron Scott's doghouse for 2 years or two seasons. This is a guy who a few months ago believed he was going to be bought out, traded, or just cut. And there was talk that maybe his NBA career was over. Maybe that he'd have to go play in China if that could work. But there wasn't a lot of hope for his career. And then now look at it. It's just it's a reality that I'm still not used to. And I just, yeah, I can't believe it happened.
Well, I feel like a big part of it has been Luke. Like, I thought with Byron to a large extent, when Nick would do Nick Young things, you know, he'd roll his eyes. He would, you know, he didn't appreciate it at all, you know. And I think for, you know, and this is completely intangible. It's completely impossible to prove statistically. But I think Nick, you know, needs to be allowed to be Nick, so that he can, you know, fully succeed, as my dog is being Nick in the background with her squeak toy.
I think to some degree you're right. Yeah, Nick needs to kind of be himself to have success. And beyond that, I think he needs to know, just like a lot of players, that the head coach has confidence in you. And that wasn't the case with Byron Scott. You know, basically ever since when Byron was hired, it was the same as number that Nick Young was signed to a 4-year deal. And, you know, basically from the get go, or at least it certainly seemed that way, and it played out that way eventually, that their personalities just didn't mesh. You know, Byron is kind of a hard charging military drill sergeant, old school kind of guy. Nick is a happy go lucky, keep it light, joke around kind of guy. That's just always been who he is. And that, you know, yeah, it just, like, it didn't blend well between those two. And I think Nick Young kind of lost the faith, you know, above him, of like having someone believe in him. And that was one of the biggest things that he talked to me about, was having faith from Luke Walton. I think more than anything, he credited that for the position he's in now.
Did Nick happen, and this is something that Harrison directly wanted me to ask, but did Nick at all, did he mention a deal with the devil that he made to all of a sudden become a good defender? Like, was that?
No, that's a good question, because, I mean, there's part of me that wonders if that's what it would have taken, because I remember coming into training camp, you know, it was a few days early on when Luke Walton made the point that, like, that Nick had become like their best perimeter defender. And I was just like, what? Like, wait a minute. This is a real sentence here in the world that we're in? Nick Young, like, elite perimeter defender. But sure enough, that's what had happened. And he was playing with such hustle and energy on both ends of the court that he forced his way into the starting lineup on opening night. And I think what that was a sign of, more than anything, and I talked to Nick about this, was just understanding that this was probably going to be his last chance. There were no guarantees that his career, you know, like he said, he thought he was going to be bought out, traded, or just cut, and, you know, it wasn't clear if he was going to play anywhere else. And so I think he looked at this season, at, you know, starting with training camp, as, okay, this is my last chance. This is maybe my last go around. I can't waste it. I've got to really dig in. And for him, that meant on both ends of the court, particularly on defense. But yeah, he's been a really effective defender, which again, I cannot believe I'm saying these words, but Nick Young has been a really effective defender and has showed great energy and hustle and has been really consistent as well.
Well, it's kind of funny. I remember when that quote came out that Luke said that it was between Nick Young and Jordan Clarkson for the two best defenders on, you know, during the preseason. And Clarkson kind of makes sense because that was something that he said he was really going to focus on in the offseason and all that and the other. And then when he said Nick Young, I said, oh my God, the Lakers are going to be awful defensively. Like, there's no way this is going to work out, you know? And you know, it's come to pass as true. I also think a big part of it was the empowerment that went on when Luke, you know, when he assigns Young to the top scorer on the other team, the top perimeter scorer on the other team. It's a responsibility that I don't think Nick anticipated being, you know, assigned with. And if he sees his coach is willing to stick his neck out there like that with him, you know, and then also have the confidence in him, you know, it's not one of those things that Luke would do that to, you know, ensure failure, you know, to send a message like this is what you have to be able to guard, you know. He really seems to empower him with the responsibility, and Nick has kind of taken that up as a challenge, and he seems to really enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, and you bring up a key word, I think, of empowerment, because that's something that Luke Walton has talked about a lot. He wants to feel players to feel empowered, and he's also talked about wanting them to kind of take ownership in this process of rebuilding the Lakers and putting Nick in that position. And I saw the other night, and I was thinking about this very point that you're making, when Nick was guarding Jimmy Butler from the Bulls for a few possessions, or at least that I was noticing. And, you know, granted, Jimmy still scored 40 points. He's a great player. I get all that. But there's part of me that also would look at that and think, like, man, if you were to tell me a few months ago that here we'd be, Nick Young would be starting and he'd be guarding, like, the top perimeter score on the other team, and it would make sense to some degree because he's been the Lakers, you know, arguably their most consistent perimeter defender. It's kind of crazy. But, you know, sure enough, I think the empowerment from Luke Walton, again, that's a word he uses all the time. And it's in these moments, like giving Nick Young these defensive assignments, where he really establishes trust and belief and confidence. And all of these things they're just really crucial in the relationship between a player and a head coach.
I was also interested, last time you and I spoke on the show, we talked about how the human element to basketball seems to be something that you're kind of driven to. Was there anything, what drew you specifically to the story that, you know, it seems to extend beyond basketball? It's there's a lot of human elements in this, and I was wondering what brought you to it.
Sure. Well, I mean, I've been thinking about it basically since the beginning of the season, you know, to that point when Nick's NBA career was kind of on life support, and he revived it along with the help of Luke Walton, who he credited greatly. And then, you know, there was the flu game. I think again, was it? I'm trying to, you know, pardon my memory, but I want to say it was against the Spurs, or maybe the game after. Or no, I think it was the Bulls game, and where Nick played with the flu, and they didn't know if he was going to play or if he did play, you know, what he could do. But he was fantastic. I think he had double digits in the first half, and he looked great all through the game. And after the game, when I asked Luke Walton about just kind of being used to this reality, that just kind of stuck with me for the rest of the night. And I thought I wanted to talk to Nick about what seemed like the point of kind of his career potentially being over, at least it seemed that way, if he felt that. And then to some sense of, you know, if there was satisfaction of being at this point now, if he could have believed it. And one of the things that stuck out with me that he told me was how during the last couple of seasons, particularly last season when he was kind of being bashed by Byron a lot and the whole thing just wasn't working, that his happy-go-lucky persona was kind of a facade. Mm-hmm. I think I wrote that he put that up kind of as a shield to not really allow people to see what he was dealing with underneath, which is certainly, like any person in a situation like that, I'm sure doubt, anxiety, all of it. You run the gamut of a lot of negative emotions. And he was certainly feeling a lot of those and then, you know, felt them through the summer. But just to go through all that, and, you know, we haven't even talked about the off-the-court stuff, like the, you know, the video with D'Angelo or the other things that that Nick Young endured. But to go through all of that and come out on the other side somehow still intact, I think was really It's really remarkable. I think if you put any person in a workplace environment through the gamut of some of the things that he had to go through, and then, you know, their employment, not only in that company but in that industry, is really, really in doubt. And then all of a sudden, in a few months, they turn it around like he has. I think that's – yeah, you don't see turnarounds like that, I think, in any walk of life too often, for sure.
I would also – there's something about the way athletes, professional athletes, define themselves by their trade. Like we all – you know, if somebody were to ask me, hey, what do you – you know, tell me about yourself. People tend to start with what they do as a profession. But for professional athletes, it's something that they've been really, really good at for – the vast majority of their lives, and they've proven doubters wrong to make it to the point of being a professional athlete. So there's so much that you know, you kind of identify yourself by an athlete, and to feel like you're going to lose that while also going through the loss of potentially of what wound up being an engagement. Both those things, like for me, I define myself by my trade, and I define myself by my relationship with my wife. Like those are the two proudest things that I have. To lose both of those in the matter of, and to feel like you're going to lose both of those in the matter of a year, like you're saying, that kind of turnaround is insane. Did he talk at all about the off-court stuff and the effect it's had on, you know, this entire process?
I didn't get into it too much with him. One of the things that I asked him was like, what was the low moment last year? Like if he could pick one. And one of the things that he said was it would be really hard to pick just one. There were so many really low moments, whether it was on the court, off the court. And I think just like the entire season for him kind of probably felt like one long moment. But if you compound all of it and the stress, I'm sure, he felt, and just the doubt of it ever going ahead. You know, he mentioned that after the NBA championship game between the Warriors and the Cavs, that he thought the Lakers were going to make some cuts and that he was going to be one of them. And I asked if he believed his NBA career might be over at that point, because that's what a lot of people certainly thought, that he might have to look into playing in China and all that. And He said he thought that he would have gotten a chance somewhere else, you know, maybe going to training camp somewhere. But if you just look at what his reputation was, you know, he's kind of been considered something of a knucklehead for a lot of his time. And that's, you know, I don't know how fair that term is, but it's been thrown around a lot around his name. He's kind of got a cartoonish personality, and in the right environment he could do well, but if the environment's just, you know, just not quite right, I think it could be disastrous in some ways. You know, you look at how it was the last couple of years. So, but he believed he'd be given another chance somewhere potentially, but he'd obviously have to work his way up. That was what he thought. I don't know how widespread that feeling was around the NBA. Certainly a lot of people I talked to thought that, you know, not only was Nick Young's career with the Lakers done, but his career was probably done in general. So to basically go from like being on the brink to having to prove yourself all over in a new situation in training camp, and then to be where he's at now, the arc of that is just – it's really hard to believe. But, yeah, I mean, to go back to the point you made, I don't know – there's a lot of things that I think are symbolic of, like, the turnaround that Luke Walton has brought. And this, to me, really starts, you know, it stands near the top of the very top of the list, frankly. You know, like the team right now, we're recording this on a Tuesday, has 7 wins coming into their game against Oklahoma City tonight. It's hard for me to pick a storyline, though, that better kind of captures the impact that Luke Walton has made versus kind of the resurrection of Nick Young.
I completely agree. Now, you said you talked to people around the league about Nick Young's career prospects in the NBA. What was the feeling? Did you talk to people from the Lakers? What was the feeling there as far as, did they think that he'd be able to turn around like this, or did they think this might be a sunk cost? Was this something that Luke, you know, went to the front office and said, I actually think I can help this guy. I think I can revitalize this guy's career.
I don't know too much about some of the like specific conversations that Luke had behind closed doors with some people, but the impressions that I got from talking to people were that Luke wanted to give kind of everybody a fresh start and a clean slate. Mm-hmm. And he certainly did that with Nick Young. Now, around the NBA, I think a lot of people who were observing the Lakers and their situation, particularly last year, and again, last year, weird year. Kobe Bryant farewell tour, which affected everything in almost every way you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So I think people were observing that, and they took everything with a grain of salt. But even still, it was evident from the people that I talked to that there wasn't much belief, particularly after the video incident involving D'Angelo Russell, that the Lakers could ultimately hang on to them, that they were going to have to pick sides and between Nick Young and D'Angelo Russell. And there wasn't a person that I found who said they should take Nick Young. You know, obviously D'Angelo Russell, second overall pick last year, great young talent, has had some really excellent games, is considered one of their key pieces, if not their key piece, of their young core. Hopefully for the Lakers, hopefully believe that will be the cornerstone of their future. And so they had to kind of make a decision over whether or not to stick with one or the other. And I think common sense, logic, you know, everything pointed towards them keeping D'Angelo over Nick. But here we are, where Luke Walton, true to kind of fresh slate mentality that he wanted to bring to the Lakers, of giving Nick Young a chance. And I think this is also symbolic of just like the idea of throwing someone a life preserver, and then how kind of grateful they are just for having that chance when they're kind of floundering.
Absolutely. That's a great visualization of Nick Young. 'Cause I couldn't imagine like his life, everything that was going on last year, to even try to focus on basketball. I would imagine by the time the season ended, he was just happy to get away from the game. Did he talk about the process of, you know, the summer of just getting away altogether, refocusing on his game? Was there anything like that that went into it? And by the way, everybody, I'm talking right now to Baxter Holmes, and he just wrote a great, great profile up at ESPN.com of Nick Young's revitalization. So if you haven't checked it out yet, you better go out and read it. It's required reading for anybody who listens to the show.
I know that he stayed away from the Lakers practice facility. One of the big things that Luke Walton talked about was that on their own, a lot of the young Lakers players were in there virtually every day. Mm-hmm. All throughout the summer, they were playing pickup games, they were working out, but just they spent their summer kind of at the gym. But Nick Young told me that he actually didn't go to the gym at all.
Yep.
All summer, and that he didn't step inside the Lakers practice facility in El Segundo until the very end of September, kind of around when training camp was going to start. So I think for him in that way, you know, it's very clear that he was just getting away. I think personally and professionally, Nick Young needed to work through some things. He kind of intimated that, and certainly going, you know, staying away from the gym, I think is symbolic of that, of him kind of wanting to work through some personal stuff, which, you know, at the end of the day, it does take precedence over basketball. It's a job, but it is, you know, the personal stuff certainly is more important. And so I think that working through some of that was really at the top of his list this summer, and kind of, again, refocusing and understanding, which he talked about, the idea that this was probably going to be his last chance. And we know, we talked about like his impact on the defensive end, but I think what that is symbolic of is of Nick realizing that, okay, I'm kind of known as a jokester or cartoon kind of guy. Like, I these funny quotes and crazy stories, and I keep it light, and funny outfits sometimes, but he's kind of the jester of the NBA, the clown of the NBA sometimes. Mm-hmm. But that's not what I need to be. I have to take this as seriously as I can take it, because I'm not guaranteed anything beyond this. Like, my career, my livelihood is on life support with a faint pulse. If I don't do everything I can right now, there's no guarantee, that anything will happen going forward. So I really have to make the most of this moment. And I think that's what you saw him, aside from just regathering himself emotionally and personally this summer, was appreciating that idea, which, again, I fully kind of grasp now that he's in, when I look back at training camp in Santa Barbara, because that was the moment when his hustle and his energy really started to show themselves, even behind closed doors to the media. But it was certainly impressing everybody on the team, particularly Luke Walton And it was at that point when Luke said, you know, best perimeter defender we've got sometimes. And it raised a lot of eyebrows, but that's when you were kind of starting to see Nick Young's seriousness towards the circumstances he was in really start to show themselves.
Has he, regarding the quotes, because he has been great for a quote basically throughout his career, especially out here in Los Angeles. Regarding his quotes, have you noticed a difference in the type of quotes that he's giving this year? Or is he kind of, you know, not back to the same old, but has he gone back? Has he seemed more happy to get back to the jokes, or is he more thoughtful in what he says in post games and in this interview, for example?
I think he's still himself. I wouldn't be clear about that. Like, I don't think Nick has strayed from who his personality is. And I think in some levels, there's an appreciation for the fact that he was, I think, as he had said before, kind of like, the hand out of the grave, coming back from the dead, so to speak. So I think there's definitely appreciation for that, for how hard he worked and fought, and then here he is. But he's definitely still himself, and that speaks to something, I think, that's larger than just him, and again ties back to Luke Walton, and that's just the idea that Luke wanted to instill kind of a fun-filled, joyous, happy type of culture, that, you know, one that existed when he was in Golden State. He's talked about it on several occasions of wanting to bring it down to the Lakers, and some of the elements of that go with empowering players and wanting them to feel like they can take ownership in the process. And he's certainly done that with Nick Young, but the whole locker room, aside from just Nick, is upbeat. Guys really seem happy to be there, happy to go to work. Granted, you know, it's a night and day different situation than they were in last year under Byron Scott, and with the farewell tour and all of that. But yeah, I think Nick, like everybody there, there's just, you know, there's smiles on their faces. They're happy to be there. They're happy to be at work. And I think you see that on the court sometimes too, with just the happiness that they have playing in games and kind of playing together. But yeah, there's Nick is still himself, but there's I did get the impression of an appreciation from him for what he's gone through to get to this point, and that now he's, I don't want to say he's made it, because we're a little more than a half dozen games into the season, but it's still really remarkable at this point that, you know, Nick Young is starting for the Lakers and is making a big impact if you consider where he was just a few months ago.
The locker room aspect of this, it struck me. I remember Julius Randle said earlier this season that Nick Young is one of the greatest teammates he's ever had, right? And I said that to Sean Hyken on a show that we recorded last night, and he just burst out laughing. And I feel like Nick, when especially with a young team like the Lakers have, that happy-go-lucky, you know, and combined with the maturity that he's shown this year to revitalize his career, that combination would seem to really resonate with guys who, you know, they want to make it. They want to reset the Lakers' image, their image with the Lakers. The D'Angelo Russell situation was always going to be awkward, but, you know, how have you seen that take place with Nick Young standing within the locker room?
I would say the vibe between all the players has been pretty good. I think in some ways, a lot of the players were waiting for their kind of opportunity. And that opportunity was put on hold last year for the farewell tour. I remember when I spoke to Mitch Kupchak about that and just saying, like, look, the priority this year is Kobe. And that's that. The youth development, everything else is just kind of on the back burner. And so I think everybody was just kind of biding their time. But then you see in late March, the leaked video, the fallout from that involving D'Angelo and Nick Young, and there's a lot of talk about whether they can coexist. But the locker room vibe has been great. It's a multi kind of layered thing. I think on the one hand, you see guys who are just kind of – you see parts of the culture that Luke Walton's wanted to install, whether it's the joyous, fun-filled type of atmosphere. You know, he's big on, maybe cracking a joke and, you know, giving a dig and wanting players to dig into him as well. So guys tossing kind of those kind of remarks back and forth. But I think also there's an acceptance amongst the players of that it takes all of them to kind of win. And we've heard these kind of remarks from them after many of their wins and even after some of their losses, that they know that there's not really a star on the team right now and that it requires all of them to play really well and together more than anything on any given night for them to be in a game and especially to win a game. So, there's a kind of a collective idea amongst everybody that if it's being on the same page or understanding it takes all of them to win, all of that. And that to me has helped create all of those things I just mentioned. I think has helped create what looks to be, on the surface at least, and certainly feels that way when I'm in there, a pretty healthy locker room. And certainly, the relationship between Nick and D'Angelo, seems pretty healthy right now. And that wasn't something that, I don't know if I'd be saying that however many, months ago.
All right, so I have one last question on the Nick Young stuff, and how are you doing on time? Because you also got an interesting quote from D'Angelo Russell about Manu Ginobili that I wanted to pick your brain about.
I'm good on time. I probably got about 20 more minutes, I guess. I could do, yeah.
Perfect. I don't think it'll take that long. Regarding the Nick Young thing, was there anything, I mean, especially with a profile like this, stuff is not going to make it all the way to the, to the release and stuff. Was there anything that didn't make the profile or the article that you wish could have? What was the toughest thing to leave out?
To be honest with you, I don't think there anything was. This wasn't like a piece for the magazine or something that I'd been working on for a long time. I just kind of gathered a little bit of string here and there, and I thought the time was right after the big flu game to write it. But to be honest with you, in terms of writing it, I just sat down after I talked to Nick Young for, not too long, after a practice earlier this week, and then sat down to write it shortly thereafter. And kind of, it unfolded pretty quickly. I'm very appreciative that folks seem to read it and enjoy it. I think it speaks to Nick's kind of popularity around the NBA and kind of the surprise and shock that he's been able to take his career to this point when, again, it seemed like it was dead. But yeah, I think there's nothing I could think of that really got left on the cutting room floor that I missed.
That's great to hear. I mean, it's the kind of story that like people could read forever, I think. It's not the kind of story that people would say, oh man, that was just way too much information about a guy who somehow found himself with everything going on that he did. All right, so I'll segue awkwardly then to D'Angelo Russell, and he said that he his idol or the guy that he wants to mirror his game off of is Manu Ginobili, and that kind of struck me as interesting. So I guess I'll start the conversation with, does this mean he hates Kobe Bryant?
Ah, that's funny. It was interesting to me too that he kind of had the that he admired him as much as he did, watched him as much as he did. I think called him one of his favorite players, if not his favorite player. I feel like growing up in America, a lot of times kids want to be like the biggest stars, the Michael Jordans, the Kobes, the Allen Iversons, whatever. They want to be like the big, great American stars who play for the big teams and all of that and start and everything. And here, D'Angelo, he likes, not American, but a foreign player. And not just a foreign player, but one who plays on a small market team. And not just one who plays on a small market team, but one who comes off the bench. And I think on some level what that really shows me is like D'Angelo's just appreciation for the finer things in basketball. Mm-hmm. He understands that Ginobili is a fellow lefty, has had one of the best careers I think that any player could really kind of want. He's been extremely effective. He's really crafty. He's a great shooter, super high IQ, tremendous passer. Some of the things that D'Angelo talked about was, Manu's how hard, he's just kind of unpredictable. He always seemed to have energy coming right off the bench, and he's a spark that always impacts the game in a great way. And the more you listen to it, it's like, yeah, these are all great things. Like, why wouldn't you want to be like that? And one of the things D'Angelo mentioned was you know, he knows that Manu's not necessarily the best athlete, but he sees, but he said, I'm not either. And so I look at what Manu's able to do and the impact he's able to have in a game, and maybe similar skill sets in terms of lefties, not tremendous athletes and like good size and all that. And he said, why can't I be like that? So yeah, it just, it shows to me just his kind of appreciation for who he is and for what success in basketball looks like and what it's, and what it means to really admire a player if admiring them to you means wanting to model your game after them.
Did he say anything to the extent of, or did you get the vibe that it might extend to other facets of the game that don't necessarily, you know, not the off-court stuff, the way he wants to be a leader, the selflessness that Manu tends to play with? Did he say anything about that, or it seemed like it was a pretty quick quote?
Yeah, I think that that's all implied. I think the you know, wanting to emulate Manu Ginobili in, you know, all the ways that he is, and certainly the Spurs are kind of a the Spurs are a case study for a lot of teams. You know, we hear it every time the Spurs come to town, or when, you know, certainly I've been to San Antonio for games, or you hear people bring up the Spurs, you know, coaches, players, executives, scouts, people bring up the Spurs just because, like, the mentality and the selflessness that exists in that organization is envied across the NBA, across professional sports. I think even across, like, just businesses. I think every business would love to have the type of culture and environment that they have there. And I think D'Angelo has often talked about how much better basketball is when you can get your teammates involved and everything's kind of flowing really smoothly like that. And so I think, you know, he one of the reasons he said he watched, he's seen a lot of Manu is because all during his time growing up, Manu and the Spurs were always seemed to like be in the NBA Finals, which is very true. Throughout the 2000s, they were always there, or they were right in it on national TV, and so he got to see a lot of them and really came to admire him that way. But yeah, I think, you know, in terms of selflessness and you know, the type of player and teammate he is, I think that's definitely implied. Manu is a great example, I think, for a lot of players, as are a lot of guys who play for the Spurs, you know, whether it's Duncan or Parker or whatnot. They all are like an extremely close-knit family.
Yeah, I personally, when Popovich walked over to Walton and then Walton relayed the message that he, you know, Popovich said that the Lakers are doing some good stuff. I forget the exact phrasing of it. That was among the cooler moments of the season, because it was kind of a it felt like affirmation of what the Lakers are trying to do right now in this process that they're currently in.
Yeah, but look, anytime Popovich says something, he means it. You know, he does not mince words. He's not here to give faint praise. He's not here to kind of just, you know, say nice things for the heck of it. He means what he says, whether it's about basketball or whether it's about politics or whether it's about whatever the case may be. Anything that's on his mind, he means precisely what he says. And the respect for him amongst players, amongst fellow coaches, I don't know if there's a, you know, I mean, I have to think right now, but it's hard to think of a more respected figure in the NBA community than Greg Popovich. In sports, really, yeah, that's a good point. In sports, even than Greg Popovich. Like, when he speaks, everyone listens and pays close attention. And, you know, and he doesn't. I'm trying to think of the last thing that he said, frankly, where you're like, that sounds kind of dumb, or that doesn't make any sense, or like, that's kind of a that's not a very intelligent take. Like, he, you know, he's money all the time, everything he says. So yeah, for him to make those remarks, I remember when he made them the other night, like, that was a, you know, that's a compliment from on high. And I know that meant the world to Luke, and I'm sure to a lot of the Lakers fans as well, just that, like, what the Lakers are doing is good and that they're ultimately headed in the right direction.
Absolutely. I found it interesting. I think Randall went over and kind of joked around with Popovich a bit. And Randall had spent, I think it was only a couple weeks, right, in Vegas working with the Team USA, or the Youth Team USA there. And yeah, I mean, it's great to see the recognition that's going on from both sides of that equation. All right. Well, unless you had anything else to add on that one.
No, I just, you know, I think initially for a lot of people there was this surprise of you know, I'm speaking of D'Angelo and Manu, just that D'Angelo would kind of be a player that or that Mono would be a player that D'Angelo kind of wanted to model his game after. But I think in some ways it speaks to just this era, yeah. And you know, what does it mean to define success? And to some people, I think success might have been the old way of looking, like, I just want to be like the guy who scores a lot of points. So it's like, or you know, it makes a lot of highlights. But I think as we get into, I think basketball, the conversation around basketball has gotten way more intelligent. Analytics drives a lot of that. Social media, I think, helps certainly drive a lot of that. The way even like stories are reported now, you know, there's just the conversation is kind of heightened, and certainly how organizations are built. And so I think there's kind of appreciation of like getting beyond maybe somebody who just has a lot of points per game to like somebody who can really impact the game in a lot of great ways. And that is kind of an ideal role model. And I was thinking about that with D'Angelo, just that, you know, him wanting to model his game after Manu spoke to kind of like this generation, and how really in some ways I feel like the basketball conversation has advanced and become more intelligent, and people are appreciating maybe some of the smaller hidden things that really really add up to like what makes a great player great, versus in the past where, you know, that kind of stuff we might have just defined by highlights, you know, dunks, game-winning shots, and high point totals.
Yeah, when he said Manu Ginobili, it spoke to maturity beyond the narrative that surrounds him. You know, the deal with D'Angelo Russell, everybody I talk to about him says it's about what's going on up in his head. It's about what he can do, you know, between the ears and stuff like that. And I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I don't also agree to the full extent that it goes to. When he says something like this and he talks about Manu Ginobili, that takes legitimate thought as to what he wants to be as a player and what he deems as a success as a career. And that would kind of fly in the face of a lot of the stuff that you kind of hear about him.
Sure. And remember that this has been his favorite player since he was very little. Mm-hmm. You know, he's talked about him for years and years and years. So this has been a guy he has long admired, and him coming to that point, you know, years ago, I speaks to, I understand, yeah, there are maturity questions about D'Angelo. Those questions have existed for some time, but I think, yeah, when it comes to basketball, he really does appreciate the finer things and is, you know, maybe more mature and more ahead than some people might think.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. Again, this was Baxter Holmes. He wrote the great profile on Nick Young. He's my favorite beat writer. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody else. But yeah, I really appreciate you coming on, and I look forward to hopefully catching up with you again as the season goes along.
Absolutely, Anthony. Thanks so much for having me, and thank you for the very kind words. I really appreciate it, man. Look forward to catching up again soon.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So that was my conversation with Baxter Holmes. Quick note, in case anybody didn't notice, that was recorded before the Laker game tonight and Nick Young's shot heard around Twitter. Still.
Damn it. What? Seriously?
What?
You recorded it without me again.
No.
You know, man, this is just messed up. Like, you told me we were going to record after the game, and then you go and do this.
I will neither confirm nor deny reports of people requesting to come on in your absence, but we don't have to get on that. Like, we don't have to talk about that right now. We can just wrap up the show and we can move on. Enjoy the Lakers win.
Okay, well, can you promise me at least that the next show that we do with a guest, you're going to have me on and interview them?
Yes, I absolutely, positively promise that if I talk to Sean Hyken later this week, you will absolutely be involved in the conversation, because he's great. He's a really good conversation.
Okay, so when we talk to him for our Friday show, you're going to loop me in on it.
Yes, you will be involved. I promise.
Okay. All right. That's fine then, I guess.
All right. So I hope everybody enjoyed the conversation with me and Baxter. Mostly, you know, and if you enjoyed it in part because Harrison wasn't there, then, you know, maybe that's something that we should adjust for in the show or whatever. But, you know, we can cross our bridge when we get there.
Okay, now, man, I'm right here. This is hurtful. I get made fun of on Facebook Live and then by you on the show.
Hey, everybody, be nicer to Harrison on Facebook Live. It's just mean. Oh God!
You're encouraging it now. It's gonna be even worse from now on. People, go check my Twitter feed at HMFagan if you want a little dosage of after every Facebook Live I do the type of treatment I get.
Be nicer to Harrison or be meaner to me. Like I will take on this challenge of whatever.
Yeah. If people keep being mean to me on Facebook Live, I'm gonna give Anthony Stalker his phone number.
Oh my God! All right. That does it for this show. Really fun win last night with the Lakers, who continue to prove all kinds of people wrong, including ourselves, right? If you would have told
me... They're one-third of the way to the wins that I predicted this season.
If you would have told me heading into this year that at the 15-game mark, they would have the same exact record as the Oklahoma City Thunder, I would have called you insane.
Okay, so I know we're trying to wrap up here, but more surprising development. Nick Young hitting a game-winning three for a non-Chinese basketball association team in 2016, or the Lakers having the same record as the Thunder, like 10 or whatever so games into the season that we are now, like 15 games into the season?
Yes. The answer to that question is yes. there is no other answer than yes. So that does it for this show. We have a couple more shows, really cool guests coming up that I promise Harrison will be involved with. Maybe. I promise, Harrison, you're going to be involved. I swear.
Okay. All right. I was worried for a second.
All right. I promise. If you missed any of the shows so far this week, there have been some good ones. Fred Katz was great yesterday. The show on Monday where we talked about – what did we talk about on Monday?
A lot of stuff, man.
We talked about stuff on Monday. If you missed that, go back and check that out. The best way to ensure that you're not missing any of these shows is to subscribe to us on iTunes or just find us, our links on Audio Boom, and then Silver Screen Enroll gets the show out there, and then as well as TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers on SeatGeek and Mack Weldon to get a $20 rebate on SeatGeek and a $20% discount on Mack Weldon. We will talk to everybody tomorrow. Enjoy today, everybody. Enjoy it. This late and just enjoy this team. I tweeted out last night after the game. This team, man. This team.
We aren't going to have a show on Thanksgiving, so be thankful for Nick Young.
Yes, absolutely.
And the Lakers.
All right. We will talk to everybody soon. Shouts to Nick Young. Shouts to this Lakers team. Shouts to Luke Walton. Shouts to Harrison Fagan's incredible interviewing skills with Fred and Baxter so far this week.